Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to session 20. There is an exciting title, Call It in the Future, Thinking Forward. I think you came here to learn something about future. We will do, actually not me, but our presenters will do their best to convince you that the future is uncertain. Okay. Thank you for coming, and I would like to thank our presenters to come. And first of all, there are just very simple rules. We have four presentations, which means 15 minutes per presentation. 2 minutes before the end, I will just give. This is not red card. This is yellow card. So it's not, okay. So, and then we will still have plenty of time for discussion after all presentations. So my name is Krzysztof Jajuga, and I'm the member of Methodological Committee of Statistics Poland. I'm also the member of Program Committee of this conference. So it's my great pleasure to introduce our first presenter, Cristina Pereira de Sá from Eurostat. So Cristina, the floor is yours. The topic is the future role of international organizations, enhancement of relevance and quality of official statistics.
Okay, so good morning, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm in Eurostat responsible for the governance of the European statistical system and the external relations. So you will not be surprised to see that my presentation this morning will be mostly about governance in the context of quality. First, I will be very brief, reminding you about the challenges faced by the global statistical system currently. And I will like to give you, especially for those, of course, of you who don't know, some examples from the European statistical system, because I think the ESS can actually be a reference, or at least some of the elements within our system for the third part of my presentation, which is basically the way forward, where you will see that I will propose a few things, a few ideas, and then I hope this will launch the discussion. Bon, here, as I said, we could be very brief. There's nothing new here for you, so growing interest in statistics, need for global measurement in lots of domains. So there's a shift from national to global. So we really need a strong global statistical system to improve the credibility of official statistics. And other types of challenges are also, of course, the need to work a bit more in terms of improving timeliness, the relevance as compared to what our users are requesting, use of new data sources, which has a lot of impact in the way we produce our statistics, and in general also shrinking of resources that we are all basically facing. So now, I would like to just very briefly as well speak about two important governance bodies within the global statistical system. This doesn't come as a surprise to any of you, especially the first one, the UN Statistical Commission, which is in a way the apex for the way we produce statistics at international level. I present these two because they are very different in a fundamental way. The UN Statistical Commission, as like everybody of the UN, is composed of countries. The members are countries. And there, the international organizations are only observers. So there's a limited role that international organizations can play in that context. Whereas for the Committee for the Coordination of Statistical Activities, the members there are international organizations. So this committee, the basic role is really to coordinate what international and supranational organizations do at global level at a very early stage, if possible, develop methodologies to put into commonality some standards and platforms, And so the point there is that what the several different international and supranational organizations are doing, that there is no overlap, that there is a maximum of coordination to avoid also burden on member states. So now on the second part, I will explain a bit how the European statistical system works and why I think that this is a good reference for some of the elements that in the third part of my presentation I will put forward for discussion. Well, for those of you who don't know, this is a partnership between Eurostat, all national statistical offices, and other national authorities in the member states producing official statistics, and then at the level of European statistics. Now, I wanted especially to raise your attention to the next slide, because this is a visual representation of the way the system is governed. We have the first level, political level. This is also not a surprise for you, the Commission, the Council, and the European Parliament. In the yellow box, the system itself, there are several levels. You have the working level, the management level, and then the very high strategic level. And then two bodies which basically provide strategic advice to the whole system. I have put some red arrows there because in my presentation later on, I will make reference to some of these bodies so that you remember where they are positioned in the system. But basically, you will see that the bodies which I would like really you to pay attention to are the ones at strategic level, the ESS committee, the partnership group, and then at the strategic advice level, ESGAB, the European Statistical Governance Advisory Board. And I will explain later on why. In terms of governance, bon, as I said, the very high strategic level is ensured by the European Statistical System Committee, basically the heads of all national statistical offices in Europe, and some of observers, some international organizations as observers. And Eurostat, of course, as chair of the committee in this respect, as a central role, a leadership role. We don't collect statistics, as you know. These are provided by the national statistical systems. And so we ensure the harmonization, we check the quality, we validate, and then we disseminate European statistics. There's also an interesting group in the context of the governance of the system, which is the ESS Committee Partnership Group. This is a subset of the committee, and it's interesting because it's much smaller, only 10 members, and it has a very heterogeneous composition because even though it's all at high level, they are all directors general or presidents of the national statistical offices, but some of them are by default what we call ex-official members, like Eurostat's director general, but and our own deputy director general, but also because it is composed of several members elected by their peers, and also some that come from the rotating presidency of the council. So this is interesting because there's each 6 months something that changes and moves in the membership, and this allows that the discussions don't get stuck with people always coming with the same idea. So it's something that I will propose later on for us to bear in mind, because a kind of agile group like this one could be useful at a global level. I would also like to remind you that in terms of governance, lately for the last 10 years, let's say, the system has been subject to really a big, big enhancement of the governance. I have quoted there several several tools that you for sure know, like the European Statistics Code of Practice. It has been created in 2005, but in the meantime updated twice already. The last time was end of last year. Then this body I mentioned, the European Statistics Governance Advisory Body. You remember that in the visual presentation, this one. Sorry, I have got the other way wrong. You see, it's the one that is in the strategic advice upstairs. This body is only composed of 7 members, and the main responsibility is to check the compliance of Eurostat and the whole system when it comes to compliance with the code, to assess the way we comply with the code of practice. And it's very interesting because it's a super political level. It reports directly to the European Parliament and the Council. The Commission ensures the Secretariat, but it's an independent body that, you know, in a way, in an independent way, supervises what we do within the system. Another thing that contributed to strengthening the governance of the European statistical system was what we call the Commission decision on Eurostat from 2012. For those of you who are more or less used to this type of language, it's what we call a commitment on confidence from the European Commission towards the production of statistics in an independent way, following the standards, you know, in terms of not only quality, but mainly in terms of the institutional way that they are produced. So professional independence from our so-called political level in the Commission. This is also this figure of this tool of the commitments on confidence appears also in the European statistical law. It's a regulation from 2009 that in the meantime has been updated in 2015. I'm sure that almost everyone here in the room knows this regulation. And there's also this instrument of the commitments on confidence addressed to the Commission, but also to member states, where indeed the idea is that the governments at national level are committed to producing statistics in an independent way, but also to ensure that the national statistical systems have the necessary resources to do so. In the European statistical law, there's also the first time that the European statistical system is enshrined in law. So this is very important for us. And finally, another very important element in terms of quality for the system is the Assess Quality Declaration. It was approved by the Assess Committee, so all the presidents of the national statistical offices in 2016, at the end of the year, 2016. Then, bon, I don't think I should go into very much detail about the European Statistics Code of Practice. You all know that it's 15 principles in 3 different pillars. So it's interesting the way it is assessed in member states via the peer reviews. And for your information, this body that I mentioned before, ESGAP, also does the peer review, but the peer review of Eurostat. So we are subject to the same methodology, to the same rules, and our peer reviews are conducted by an independent body, just like for the national statistical offices. Just a small, brief summary to say that, of course, we also have a quality assurance framework that is based on the code of practice and the standards, also on the SS quality declaration. And so this framework identifies different methods and tools which the NSIs can use to implement the code. Now, I will reach the third part of my presentation, which is basically on the basis of this. What can I propose to you to open up the discussion as a way forward in terms of articulation of the governance of the global statistical system and insurance of quality. Now, first I will focus on governance. Well, I have mentioned that, of course, the global statistical system is faced with lots of challenges. This is not very different from what the national systems face. But what is different, maybe, is that, and that's why I think that the SS is an important reference, is that within the European statistical system, we actually have the standards enshrined in law. Whereas at global statistical system, this is not true. So how can we find a way of ensuring quality standards, because we use regulations, but at the global level, these are not used. There's no legal basis. And so one of the things was, of course, what I'm proposing is that there's a reinforced governance structure within the global statistical system so that the whole system is much quicker and efficient in answering to the challenges. Bon, you probably, or some of you know, that the current system of working groups, friends of the chair, expert groups at level of the UN is under revision. It will be presented to the UN Statistical Commission next year. So I hope that this will really ensure that the groups are more agile in the way they answer to the challenges, and that's why I made reference previously to the partnership group, because I think that we need groups that have a mixed mode, so to speak, of membership, where we can combine the input to be given by countries with the input and the role that international organizations can have. So I think that one of the structures that already exists, the Committee for the Coordination of Statistical Activities that I mentioned before, could become more strongly in an enhanced way, a network of knowledge allowing people to exchange and to coordinate much better at an earlier stage. Then the second thing is in terms of standard setting and quality. That I would like to propose. And it's that we probably think of a kind of quality framework like the one we have at European level to propose at a global level. And this would imply, for example, that this same committee, which already exists, has a richer role in terms of quality checking. Because until now, the CCSA has been more concentrated on coordinating activities ex ante, but maybe what I would like to propose to you is that in the future, the committee also has a richer role in checking the quality, promoting quality standards, and translating those to enable their application in various domains. And then another thing that maybe it's worth thinking of, and I finish now, Chair, is that at the global level, maybe we could have also a body like ESGAB that I mentioned before to check and supervise the way the systems are implementing the quality standards and the different UN statistical principles, fundamental principles, and the other code of practice that exist at national level. I don't know whether you are aware, but some years ago there was this idea at the global level of creating something precisely like that, a body called WorldStat that is still not sure whether it will go forward. But in my opinion, this could also be a way of enhancing quality in the future. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for giving a nice overview of the structure and some proposals. I do think that there will be good time during discussion time just to refer to your proposals. As a second presentation, I would like to ask Giovanna Brancato from Italian National Institute of Statistics. The title is Conceptualizing Quality for Big Data.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Giovanna Brancato. I have a background as a statistician, and I've been working at ISTAT for more than 20 years now, and always in the quality matters. And since 2010, I'm in charge of the quality unit, and with the recent reorganization of ISTAT in 2016, this quality function was moved under the methodological directorate. So my view here is about quality and quality close to methodology. And since I think that in the future we will use more and more alternative new sources, unstructured sources, big data. My focus is on the conceptualization of a quality framework when using big data for statistical production. So big data quality has always been a concern in the statistical community. And we analyzed the literature, the relevant literature, and we think that there are two main streams. There are some papers trying to generalize what is known in terms of quality and applies to traditional ways of producing statistics. So there are reports from the APOR Big Data Task Force or the UNEC paper on applying quality in the input, throughput, and output of the statistical process. There are many papers also showing applications to real data aimed at estimating sources of errors, like, for example, measurement errors in mobile phone data or Wi-Fi sensor data. And finally, I want to mention a paper from Eurostat because I think it's an interesting perspective that complements the previous two, that we also need, and Eurostat needs, a procedure for the accreditation of big data as a source for statistical production. A complementary approach acknowledges the importance of process quality in the use of big data. Here, okay, doesn't matter. Here, some authors introduce some factors, quality factors in the big data validation systems, among the others, performance, security, and robustness. Other authors propose audit checks to be applied in specific phases of the production process, and they suggest data generation, data collection, and data use. Our aim, this paper is has been written with my colleague Loredana Di Consiglio, our aim is to try to systematize all the experiences that are spread on this topic, anchoring to what we propose to the known statistical frameworks and considering all the relevant factors in this applications, I mean, the use of big data. So we started from the output quality. We all know about the quality dimensions that are very well known and spread all in Europe. And we also considered some relevant input factors that can be broadly classified into, let's say, institutional factors, metadata, time-related factors, and then finally, the nature and the quality of the input sources. We also considered some process-related factors. And so, for example, system performance, real-time processing and analysis software, and all the operations that are commonly used when transforming, when dealing with big data. So let's consider the first quality dimension, relevance. We think that relevance is influenced by how binding are the agreements with our data providers and also the stability of the providers that also guarantees sustainability of the source. Of course, legislation and privacy concerns can limit the use of big data sources. To ensure relevance, we need to know the concepts. So metadata play a role, an important role, to understanding what we are getting and what we will produce. and also the use of standard concept helps in addressing the relevance. Finally, I put here the validity, that it's validity error. It's, for those of you who are familiar with other terminology, is the same of the specification errors, is when you when this statistical concept you want to measure does not is not reflected in the big data concept. Big data offer a great advantage, so we can produce statistics on new phenomena that have and explore new phenomena. So in this sense, we thought that it was nice to add to the relevance also another aspect, that is the newness of the statistical production that allows also us to anticipate user needs. However, the freshness of the big data despite the freshness of the big data, the activity of collection, storage, and analysis can hardly keep pace with this velocity. So some authors state that real-time processing and analysis of software still is an area requiring further developments. And this area, this aspect can weaken the relevance and the newness of our statistical production based on the big data. Accuracy and reliability are, of course, the sources of errors that reflect mostly the statistical source of errors in our input data. So first of all, the coverage of the populations and the selectivity error, so what we is selected in the end. Measurement errors, as an example, of course, the errors in noise in the sensor data, for example. And again, the validity, but the complexity and sometimes the nested structure of the data is also a factor that impacts on the quality through the fact that we have to derive the statistical units, so we have to apply complex procedures to derive statistical units and transform the variables. And this can lead to additional coverage and measurement errors. In addition, very often record linkage is applied to our data, especially when studying network relationships. And while applying record linkage, as we know, false match and false non-match are errors that can arise. And this will cause coverage and measurement errors in the final data set. So the errors propagate. And finally, errors can be introduced in the estimation phase when correcting for selectivity. Timeliness and punctuality is mainly affected by the agreements that we have with the data providers. And freshness, the big data are continuously updated. But of course, the National Statistical Institutes have to set a time frame for the acquisition of the data. So they have to stop at a given time. And then there is a complex and long time for analysis. And so data can become old easily. And again, the periodicity and the punctuality of the delivery have to comply with agreements with the data providers. and the complexity and of the structure and the diversity of the data have an impact on the time for the elaboration that can delay the time of delivery of the final output. Coherence and comparability. Coherence and comparability is certainly ensured, guaranteed by the use of standard concepts, and it is assessed by having a proper metadata available, complete, and clear, and also the suitability, the sustainability, sorry, of the source is a factor facilitating the comparability over time of our results. In terms of processing errors arising during the processing phase, often to ensure coherence and comparability, statistical techniques such as reconciliation and benchmarking are applied, but they rely on models, so we can also introduce error in the assumptions of the models. And also estimation is usually performed on a model based. And so sometimes the models that we use may not have the additivity and benchmarking properties. Finally, accessibility and clarity. Well, accessibility does not depend, strictly speaking, on the sources. But however, if we have available, complete, and clear metadata, we can make our results more suitable for the user to access to. And also, we can improve the clarity. And in this sense, I think it is important to cooperate with the data providers to have a good documentation in terms of structural and reference metadata. My final remarks. We proposed a structured quality framework for output quality when using big data that takes into account contextual factors, main sources of errors, process characteristics. In this work, we are this work benefits from a parallel work that I'm carrying out in the multi-source, in the ESNet multi-source quality for multi-source statistics. So we are carrying out similar reasonings. And we think that such an approach is very useful because when you anchor to non-error sources, you can also think about possible quality assurance plan to prevent these errors. You can try to apply the similar same methods that you apply in the assessment of the errors, although we are aware that the big data are more challenging in this direction. What emerged by our study of the literature is that complexity is still a concern. And so there is the need to improve process efficiency, stability, and reliability. This is only a first step of our work. We want to make this framework more operational in the future. And we think that this will contribute to increase the credibility of the statistics based on big data. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you for presentation. This is a really challenging topic, so we will probably have opportunity to discuss it. Now I will ask Stefano Manchinello, also from Italian Institute, National Institute of Statistics, and the topic is a knowledge-based approach to the statistical production process.
Good morning to everyone. As the chair has already said, I work with Giovanna in the Italian National Statistical Institute. And also this morning we are going to have three Italian speakers, but I think that at lunch you will have Polish cuisine, so not Italian cuisine. I recommend you to have the soup, because the soup here are great. Okay, I will say also, I will start my presentation by saying that, you know, I'm not an expert on quality. What I do is I care about quality, essentially because I am responsible of the production of business statistics in my country and in my career, already 20 years in at the Italian National Statistical Institute. I've been engaged in, I would say, old frame and new frame statistics like foreign trade statistics, SBS statistics, FATS and international sourcing. So my approach to data quality is more from the manager of production process rather than expert of quality, okay? So I will start my presentation with some remark, and also, you know, I'm also engaged in several projects about the future of business statistics at the OECD, UN, and also, of course, the Eurostat level. So I would like to introduce you which are the factors that are leading to change our data quality framework in the future. I will, okay, we have a first slot, and those are external factors. So it's true that at the moment, especially for business statistics, but also for other statistical domain, we have a strong competition on output from private data producer. I mean, we cannot claim anymore that we are the only, we are in a so-called monopolistic position. If you want the data, you have to knock to our door. This is not true anymore. There are other doors that are open. So essentially we live in a competitive world. So we have to base our work not on, rent, but on profit. So we have to gain profit. Also, we have also strong competition at the national level on resources, human and financial resources with other national administration. In my country, we have, the second largest debt in the world after Japan, okay? So we are competing with other administration to have some money, okay? And also, going to a broader view as the expert from Eurostat has already said, the global framework is changing. We are producing in any domain, but especially in the business studies domain, we are moving towards a global framework. So we are establishing, every country in Europe is establishing or is trying to establishing a large case unit. This means that we are going to have a focal point in every National Statistical Institute, which will be devoted to the analysis and the coherence of the of data coming from multinational enterprise, and also large scale units will be embedded in a network of experts. So that sounds that we are moving towards, you know, not outside anymore data processing, but rather knowledge-based new data. So essentially, my third external thought is that we need more knowledge to produce the data. And this is, from one side, this is a challenge, and for the other side is also a treat, as you will see in the rest of this presentation. And of course, some of us, we are, you know, facing major reorganization, reshuffling of our organization. In terms of data quality, my understanding, again, I'm not an expert of data quality, is that we have in the last decade a shift from output to process-oriented approach. So about the data quality now, we focus more on process and rather, we focus both on output but also on process. And some National Statistical Institute have been engaged in a strong reorganization of the organization of activity. As Giovanna has already said, since 3 years, my organization has completely changed the internal organization. We have established a new directorate, which is called Data Collection Directorate. So every, you know, the stovepipe approach has been broken. So in my directorate, my people are not responsible of data collection anymore. And this is also generating some internal debate about where the knowledge goes. So if you are going for a standardization in the data collection, you will be more efficient, but then you will lose contact with company, which are a rich source of information. And also a big issue that I'm very keen to discuss with you is the professional identity of official statistician. So we have, this is a forward-looking section. So I think that we have to rethink in terms of data quality, also in terms of the future of our career and our professional growth. So this is something that we have to also reflect in terms of competencies, in terms of training. So where are we going to? So let's move to the second slide. So this slide goes back to the previous one and is linked to the fact that we have, you know, at the top we have raw data. So raw data now are accessible. We have open data, so we have too many data around us. So essentially, raw data is something that is available to everyone. But if we want to consider which is the informative value of the data, we have to split the, you know, I'm from business statistics, so my mental frame is I have to produce value added. So I have to produce value added estimate for the national account. So this is my nightmare at night, it is my dream over the day, but value added is the way I think about, even about myself, you know. But now we are talking about value added in the data, which is the value added in the data that we want to invest on. Because the basic question, as Rico Giovannini said yesterday, that are we going to produce more data? Are we going to expand the volume of data that is produced by National Statistical Institute? So we are facing the competition with private data providers just producing more data. Is it feasible? No. Is it smart? No. What are we going to do? We are not going to produce more data, but we are going to produce more value added in the data, which is different, okay? Which is also connected to data quality, reputation, and also a sort of strategic positioning of National Statistical Institute as compared to private data producers. So essentially, what I've done here is that essentially, we were, in the many years ago, the only one we could access raw data because everything was based on survey. So we run the survey, we have the data. And now we have administrative data, big data, so the data are everywhere. We were, in the past, the only one with a strong technological capability to do data capturing and data processing capability. We were the only one to do it. I remember that in my institute, 30 years ago, was considered the only place in Italy which has the strongest, I would say, CPU capability in my country. Now, in my mobile phone, the CPU capability is better than in my institute, okay? So we do. So everyone has access to data. Everyone can do data capturing and data processing. Everyone, you know, commercial data providers are very good in data warehousing and dissemination tool. So I call it eroded value added of the data. This is gone. Goodbye. Okay. So we have to invest on quality. So the real value added produced by National Statistical Institute is classification and standardization knowledge, harmonization and coherence knowledge, methodological and data collection knowledge, and also, last but not least, thematic knowledge. Those knowledge is what we have and what is left in our hand, and that's exactly the area where we have to invest. Why I use the terminology knowledge? Because everyone thinks about knowledge. You know, you go to international conference, you go everywhere, and then knowledge, 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 you are very knowledgeable, you are very smart. Knowledge is everywhere. If we think about the way we consider our production process, the definition is still very old-fashioned. You know, I have met some. I tried to, you know, to write down a definition. So, what do we think about the statistical production process? A statistical production process is a highly standardized process where the value added provided by official statistician with respect to raw data is bounded to codification, classification, measurement of the statistical representativeness of final figure with little impact in terms of new knowledge added to the data. So when we think about statistical production process, we don't think about generating new knowledge, essentially. We do that. If we keep this definition of a statistical production process, which is very close to the eroded value added, this means very much rooted on data processing. And of course, we have some specific knowledge about codification methodology. This has strong implication in the organization, so you can establish a data collection division because you don't care about knowledge. So let's do a data collection outside of the business statistics. And then if you don't think about where knowledge goes, you are going to make mistakes. So I'm in favor of establishing a data collection division, but the way we are managed in my country is that the knowledge, the contact with the company on specific thematic issue is still in charge of my directory. We have done this in a very smart way. And also the criteria and the method for data quality evaluation, they ignore a bit the knowledge and approach to the respondent unit is still not knowledge-based. And I mean, so what I'm saying is that we still have in mind, to me, an old framework. So I tried to develop further this reasoning with you, linking to my, you know, previous career, which was sort of bad academic man. but as, when I started, and so since I tried to link your data quality approach with the two stream of literature, which I know quite well, which is the knowledge economics and the knowledge management literature. Those literature are not statistical. Those are economics and pure management literature. So what can we find in those literature which can be useful for us? The first definition is that any production process, including the steel, is as jointly a physical and immaterial nature, and both create value added. So you cannot ignore that any production process, including the pizza, making the pizza, is something that need tomato, but also the brain of people making the pizza. So this is, so essentially in those literature, they are much more advanced that we are in thinking about knowledge in production process. And also we have also another issue which is very relevant, which is called this tacit knowledge. Tacit knowledge, which is linked to some relevant contribution, like Nonaka is one of the founder of knowledge management, he's a Japanese. So essentially tacit knowledge is the knowledge that encompasses skill, idea, and experiences that people actively engaged in a production process do effectively use on daily routine, but they are not codified. So this is very much, this is theoretical, but this is very much linked to my experience. So when I was in the foreign trade division, I have old lady, and they were, checking the product code. They were very knowledgeable about the company and the product code. This is knowledge, tacit knowledge. When they check the data, they inside their brain, they have the knowledge about the right production code and the right characteristic of the company. But it is something that we don't consider when we design, when we evaluate quality. And also, the other stream is knowledge management literature. This is a new brain of the literature, which say we need to design our production process incorporating the knowledge. So managing the knowledge is the key strategic factor when you design a production process. So how can we learn from that? So this is very simple. I try to, let's say, that is just a very simplified framework where I try to link the knowledge with the statistical production process. So from one side, we have raw data, and on the other side, we have official statistics. So the flow that is going from raw data to official data has two different stream. One stream is a flow of data, so just the data, they are, the IT process that brings the data from raw data to official data. And then we have the flow of knowledge. So the flow of knowledge is the knowledge that we incorporate in the data. And of course, this can be codified knowledge, so already incorporated in the data, or can be tacit knowledge. This means that people engaged in the production process, they had value added in the data, but we don't know how that happened because this is not yet codified. So essentially, what is important is that in this picture is that we have interaction. So we interact with a survey respondent and we interact with data user, and the knowledge from official statistician came from data collection, IT services, methodology, and test methods. That's the way knowledge enter into this process. I have identified four types of knowledge, the thematic, technological knowledge, methodological, thematic knowledge, which is the expert, social scientist and industrial economist. So my institute is a research institute, so we have a lot of expert and about thematic phenomena. I tried to define a model of the statistical production process based on knowledge. So the key distinction is between knowledge transfer and knowledge creation process. If we assume that what we are doing is essentially, processing the data, we are in a knowledge transfer framework, so we take the raw data and we publish the official statistic. But if you assume that we are in a knowledge creation process, this means that you are an essential part of the knowledge creation process. I try to expand that to the knowledge production function, which is a new framework. So essentially, in the knowledge production function framework, this means that human capital is fundamental to add value added because it's bringing new knowledge in the data independently from the data. And so now I have some implication about how knowledge can be considered in this framework. Like, for instance, when we consider the statistical burden, we measure how many pages or how many questions the company should fill in. My understanding is that if you write down the questionnaire in a very technical statistical way, you are creating a knowledge distance, so it is very difficult to fill in. From the other side, if you classify too much the information, you are losing knowledge because the company has the knowledge and you force the company to fill in a very standardized questionnaire, and so the college, the knowledge, the real knowledge is gone. So we should also reconsider the way we design questionnaire, and also we also, okay, so there are some other issues. I'm going, so this is very much linked also to the GSBPM framework. The GSBPM framework allowed you to decompose the process, and we are in the position to link the knowledge to specific tasks. So my proposal will be to redesign the GSBPM process, taking into account knowledge as part of the process. And of course, IT is very much connected to knowledge management, so we need a very strong support from IT people. And conclusion, if I may go for the conclusion now. No.
Just 15 seconds.
Oh, great. Okay. So essentially, what I'm producing, okay, I have more questions for you than you have questions for me. So I just want to know if you like it and if you think this is good. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thank you very much. I hope that you don't ask during discussion that they vote. What is not. Okay, thank you very much for this overview of the production process in some sense. And I will now ask Jacopo Grazzini from Eurostat, show me your code and then I will trust your figures towards software agnostic open algorithms and statistical production. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me floor, and I'm very happy to be here and thinking forward, but I have to say that I'm mostly thinking backwards and sideways. I'll try to explain you through the presentation. We try to make this with my colleagues, actually, who prepared I prepared this presentation together with my colleagues from Eurostat, Jean-Marc Museux and Julien Gafoury, as well as Pierre Lamarche from INSEE. We try to make this presentation sexy with this title, but at the same time, you see, there is towards, and when you have towards in a title, you can expect some blah blah, and I try to not only do some blah blah. I don't know if I shall provide you with context, because actually I think it was really beyond the discussions and presentation yesterday. My colleagues here, also my colleague from Eurostat and the previous presentation, provide you with the context. So we have, I don't know if I shall remind some of those, the new data sources, combination of data, those are the contexts and the things that foster changes and the need for changes, justify the need for changes. So the new data source, combination of data, so that's a part of the big data. New algorithm models and technology, actually we have world evolving outside, and maybe we should take into account, doesn't mean that we should follow, but maybe somehow adapt to that. Was also mentioned previously, the privately owned data, Internet of Things data. Those are the implication on remote computation and smart statistics. Market competition was also mentioned in the previous presentation, and not only market and competition, but the fact that we have competitors in the production of data, and that has also an impact on quality and transparency in official statistics. And then we have the timely demand, with still more requests, in particular Eurostat requests for timeliness and to help with the decision-making policy. So we have those kind of requests, and we have to think about how we can deal with that and adopt somehow agile workflow and user-driven approach. So what is this presentation about? Blah, 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 blah. So the thing is that the scope, I'm going to provide with some banalities and keywords because I love keywords, so I'm going to provide many of those. Still, we try to walk the talk, actually, meaning provide some proof of concept example of what we have in mind and what we should go to. Still thinking forward, because I love the title, so thinking forward, but that, I think it's the open space for discussions, and also provide some conclusion, which is actually no conclusion, it's open questions. Why show me your code? Because this is code, and this is actually not just code. What I meant by that is, actually in my organization, I really often hear about low-level technicalities, and for me it's totally crap. It's actually high-level core business. And code is not just code, it's also it's consistency and verifiability, meaning that the way you code, the way you implement your methods is actually important, and it provides you with a way to be consistent throughout the production system, and also verifiable, means that you can check inside your code because you have parameters, because you have things that actually translate the methodology. You can verify what is actually going on. It's control and maintenance, meaning that, again, because you can have, you have a hands-on on your code, you can actually control what it is doing, and you can maintain in the future, you can adapt it, and it's really matter for production in that aspect. Traceability and auditability goes to the same things. I mean, you can detect error in your code, you can understand why some figure has been published and why there are mistakes. You can, if you have version code, you can trace back for to the source of the error. You can also show your code, actually, if you need audits, you can show your good code, explain why certain figure has been produced and why they are the way they are. And then it's again a question of, again, sorry, it's actually a question of accountability and reputation, because I think it brings credibility. When you show your code, you make people outside, in the world outside, in the statistical community, in the official statistics, but also beyond that, that you're actually able to implement the things and you understand what you're actually implementing. Not mentioned here, I'll mention it later, another keyword, communication. You can communicate not only through your reports or your deliverables or your wikis, or you can communicate through your code, actually. And cultural. Cultural is the one I mentioned before. It's not, we are facing, I'm facing in our organization, these technicalities issues. And we have to demonstrate that actually it goes beyond the just code. And that's not the way it's animated. You don't care about the animation. It's an ugly animation, obviously. That's a cue word that I haven't mentioned so far. For those of you who know about the agile development and the pillar of the agile development, what we have here is for our understanding, a strong analogy between the agile development, where we have this idea of bringing the things and opening the things, the code typically, and having a kind of shared collaborative development with a cycle where you review, you adapt, you improve, and you improve your code. Is similar in a way to the policy cycle, where you design a policy, you implement it, you test it, you have feedback, and then you try to adapt your policy and you improve it. So you can actually reflect this policy cycle in the code, for instance, in the development of an indicator, where you developing code indicator, and depending on the user feedback and what you get, you may actually improve the indicator and change. So there is a cycle. And why quality and trust? Quality and trust because if you share your code, so you open your code, that's we'll come to that, you can create, you increase the quality because you give it to the scrutiny. I mean, people can scrutinize your code and actually check that's actually what's going on and what you provide, the figures you provide are actually reliable. And trust, because they will also understand how the way it's produced. It doesn't quite, it's still the question of the policy, what you code and the decision you make for your code, it's still open, but at least you clearly show the way you do it, you implement it. So it goes to the open share, because I mentioned that opening your code and sharing your code. Actually, what we have in mind is more than opening the code, it's opening algorithm, because your code can be, for instance, proprietary. We don't care much. I mean, the idea is that whatever you implement should be open. So in that sense, it goes beyond the open source software. Of course, what we are facing in our institutions most often are legacy software. It's difficult. So we think about opening the code. So R is a solution. Yeah, but R is not a solution sometimes when you have strong legacy software. So it goes beyond just adopting this open source software. It's being more generic. And when I say I was looking backwards or sideways, it's not. I'm not being very original. The idea is only to adopt the best practices from the open source community, and it consists in openness, opening the code, then reproducibility, meaning that you give the possibility for users to actually reproduce your figures. Verifiability, it goes together. What figures do you produce? I can see your code, I can check your code, and then you can actually the way to verify the figures. Sharing, because you share to a larger community beyond your own institution. Reusability, because your code can be adapted and reused in different contexts. And collaboration. How can we actually foster that in Eurostat, foster open code? It's not me saying it, it's a presentation. Here's an excerpt of a presentation from 2013, where actually it said that this Ms. Stodden explained, actually, she's the one promoting reproducibility in science, but also in statistics. She's actually stating that software and data set curation should be explicitly included in grant proposal and recognized as a scientific contribution by funding agencies and funds made available to support it. So in 2018, so we are only 5 years late, Eurostat actually in a grant for the call for proposal for multipurpose statistics and efficiency gain in production of the smart statistics grant. Actually, we explicitly in the call for the grant mentioned that we would support open source software. I would say that that was time, but it's a good way forward, and that's actually what we can do, promoting open source code in the grant. So beyond the blah, blah, we try ourselves to actually put in practice what we in-house, what we want to promote outside. Few examples of some software we developed. I mean, there are proof of concept, low-level software. So one, Quantile, the first one, is just agnostic in the sense that it implements various, it implements a new sole methodology in various languages, just showing that including a proprietary software, SAS, which is just showing that actually we can open the code and we can clearly develop agnostic, independent of the software itself. But what matters here is the algorithm. It's a controlled and serviced software. Another one is experimental statistics on income, consumption, and wealth. It's also co-developed in R, which is reproducible and verifiable. So that's the idea being that in the case of experiment statistics, which are not yet in production, we can already advance on the opening, the idea of opening an algorithm beyond being reusable. Another one, Ping, it's a software which is implemented mostly in SAS. So again, it's proprietary, but we don't care. The idea is that we open it and we open the algorithm in it. Granular modular agnostic are some of the characteristics for the development, which aim at promoting the reuse. Reuse of the modules, reuse of the component of it. It's version and documented, which is also important for the traceability, and it's tested and exemplified, which is also important for auditability. Another one is just a software for documentation. More software, those are, again, proof of concept. You can go on the Eurostat GitHub, Eurostat domain of GitHub, just for check those. Another one, the Java for Eurostat, which actually provide access to Eurostat data layers. It's also data-centric, modular, generic, can be reused, verified. The idea being the same again. Reuse, reproduce, and share. It's open to the public. Another one is Natsu.json. Now, thinking forward, the idea is that it may not be enough actually to open the data and the algorithm. If we think about adopting machine learning neural networks, we can actually clearly explicitly write the algorithm. But when it comes to the decision making and what is actually going on, because the decision is based on massive data sets and learning process, we may not be able to explain what's going on. We may open the data, we may open the algorithm, but we may not be able to explain the final output of the algorithm. And that's an issue with communication. That's where it comes to communication. How shall we communicate about those new methodology when, yes, we can describe clearly the algorithm, we can describe clearly what's going on, but at the end, because of the neural network, for instance, we don't know what's, we cannot physically describe what's going on. How shall we communicate about it? How shall we communicate about the final decision? That's an issue. We think that before the algorithm, in that case, specific algorithm, actually become explainable, meaning that we'd be able to explain the final decision taken by the algorithm, what we can do is actually share the statistical workflows. So it's, this idea comes from the fact that nowadays we have technologies that enable to share not only the data, the algorithm, but also the workflows. Workflows mean that you would provide to users with a computational environment so that they can run exactly the same way the experiment that you are running yourself. The idea is that you basically hinder, you promote the actual reuse. You provide the computational components, just really beyond the algorithm, the way to run it, the say infrastructure behind, the software behind, to run the same experiment and regenerate the same output from your input. the idea being that you provide the public with further insight into the working of the decision-making system and to judge for themselves, to see what's going on, because they can rerun the process and actually see the way it's and they can reuse. And what is important in this aspect also that by opening beyond the statistical community, you open to a larger community, which is user who can actually share back their own implementation. Actual implementation of this principle is API that we also provide, which is data-centric. It's built on top of the Eurostat API, user-driven, because we provide with an interactive notebook to actually run the experiments, and it's so agile in the sense that it provides inside the container so that you can actually, you can prevent, you are completely free from any kind of dependency in terms of infrastructure. Conclusion, it goes to the knowledge, because we had a framework from knowledge before. In the graph you provide, in the workflow you provide, actually was a knowledge where you're going in one direction and your data user were involved at the end. I think we should involve the data users in the whole process. And that's a way to actually share feedback, because if you open your code, if you open your workflows, you may create a community which goes beyond the official statistics community, and you have the feedback of your users, and this feedback is useful for productions, because if you know what users are doing with your data, you actually may change the way you produce your data. And we believe that quality and trust are fostered, I think it's kind of obvious, by openness and transparency. And we believe in the idea of user-producer becoming producers. So they really contribute to the sharing, and the collaboration, participation, they contribute to an improvement of to an improvement of the production. Again, today there are technological solutions that enable to do this. I mean, I mentioned Jupyter Notebooks. I didn't really mention, but it's actually what we're using. Jupyter Notebooks and Docker Container Virtualize. Those are technologies that nowadays enable you to share and to go beyond the simple publication of reports, publication of guidelines. Still, we are left with some open issues, which are the traditional open issues, nothing new. They're the same questions as we had before. And I'll leave you with that.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. There were four presentations raising different questions, but by no doubt, at least as I feel, the issue of quality was crucial and the issue of future was crucial. So I think we can now open discussion, and you're welcome to ask questions to particular presenter, to all presenters, not to me. So we'll start. There are mics available, so if you can introduce yourself before asking questions, that would be helpful. Yeah, there's... Okay, yes, the lady. Yeah.
Thank you. So first of all, I would like to thank all the speakers because it's what we had really very interesting presentations. I would like to say to Stefano that I could vote for you. I like your approach. But my question is for the last speaker. In Eurostat, I work in Eurostat for the unit dealing with trading goods statistics. So production units are requested to use corporate tools to process the data. And so I would like to have more clarification about what you could have in mind for this corporate tools, because we provide an IT unit with our validation rules, with the different steps that we would like to see in the production process. We don't deal directly with the code. So do you have also reflected about the dissemination of codes in the context of corporate tools like EDIT, MDT, or FAME? Thank you.
Yes. Actually, it's thinking forward, so I don't care about what's going on now. You're not satisfied with this answer. Yes, you're right. It's basically what we are doing here is not supported by corporate tools. But we are working in adopting somehow some of those tools. That's why we are exploring those solutions. The fact is that we are mostly aiming at reaching outside users. I tell you the truth, I think when I say we have legacy issues, we have strong legacy issues in Eurostat, but it's certainly not only Eurostat, which we have to deal with. At the moment, we are working on reaching outside users, meaning people can use, because we have open data, which is basically the data published on Eurostat, and we would like to provide users with a way not only to download the data, but to build data analytics tools, let's say, on top of those data. So that's our target for the moment. And then you say about how could that come into production? It's a complex process, but I believe that if we reach users and we see outside, there is an outside community which is adopting this kind of tool, because the world around us is evolving. You know, you mentioned FAME. Anyone here has heard about FAME? No, no one, because the fact is something which is adopted in-house, why nobody outside the real world adopts it. And I think we should avoid this kind of solution. We should see what's going on outside. I would not say blindly follow, but somehow see the evolution which is going on outside and try to adapt this in-house. Of course, it's a difficult process, and myself, I have no solution for that. In terms of governance, in terms of, it's an issue, yes.
Okay. Yes.
I have the mic already. Okay. Thanks for the presentations. Really amazing, nice thoughts on the future. And I also fully agree with Stefano on his perception of the new focus. But also my question would be addressed to the last speaker. And I also like your idea of sharing the code and makes it easier for us as I work for the Federal Statistical Office of Germany. So we are always interested in seeing the code of other national statistical institutes also to orientate ourselves and to receive input. But my question would really be, so you put all the code out there, do you receive feedback? How large is the community? How much does it really, how many people have the time to read through code that they cannot really, I mean, they don't have the database, the data structures to run the code, so they would have to run it on dummy tables, isn't it? So how many people are out there helping you to validate your code? Thank you.
Why are you asking mean questions? I mean, we have very few users, actually. No, you're totally right. At the moment, we have few users. The code is available outside. What I meant by actually adopting workflow, computational workflows, the idea would be that you would provide the code with infrastructure through containers. So it's a technical solution. It's actually just a purely technical solution so that user would not care about the underlying infrastructure and the software they need to install in which version of the software. That's what we would provide. And since this, I mean, at the moment, the last software presented, Happy GISCO, and one we are developing for Eurostat, since you are accessing open data, the data available on Eurostat website, you will not have the issue with the data. We are not, at the moment, it's really dedicated to outside users. And we're not dealing with microdata, we are not addressing this kind of thing, issue. User community, yes, the code is outside, we have a few users, I'd like to have followers, I would love it, but no, it's not the case, and that's why we try to publicize in-house, because also it's not adopted in-house, but that's okay. The idea is that we it's like creating the community. We need to create the community. We need to start at a certain point. So we started that one, and let's see. And people, if people want to use whatever community, the idea is that it's available here. It's online. We are continuously working, developing, and let's see.
Yes. Next question or remark? Yes, please. Oh, yeah. I think she was first, but okay. So you ask, and then you. Okay.
May I? Rimantas Vicenavičius, statistics quality consultant from Lithuania. So let me start by thanking that especially the last two presentations impressed me so much. And I will start with observation that probably for that idea that Stefano has presented, we do not need to change GSBPM. It could be some sort of annex to GSIM. And it maybe could start not as a agreed initiative, but if we could show the most intensive workflows of tacit knowledge, that would be a very good start, come as a warning. And it could be not, we do not need a UN approval, but it could be a very good annex to another annex for GSBPM, and that could make your ideas go through very early and quickly. So thank you for that, and maybe you have some observation on that suggestion. And the second question is for the last presenter. Thank you very much. But listening to all your presentation, I was shocked that whatever is so old-fashioned for the most of IT community, it seems so new for statistical community. And I'm really shocked because your presentation should have taken place 25 years ago. And it makes me uncomfortable and still, and then I look through European Code of Practice and what you are talking about is most essential part of transparency. And I still do not find any enough explicit remark on that transparency on our statistical processes. So no doubt we have so many examples that algorithms are not enough. We have so many examples, just what comes to my mind, that Intel example, which was 10 or 15 years ago, when we discovered that multiplication was wrongly. So all we know the definition of multiplication, but if your code is not open, no one can check it, and it is wrong, and all the world uses wrong code for multiplication. And it happens far more often in our statistical software, and everyone who worked with it came across with that. So my question for you is, why do you think it's going so slow in our community, which is very keen to take in new ideas, but we are so several decades behind open source IT community. What is the reason? Because I'm sure we go quickly ahead with all European statistical.
Okay, problems. Let's give opportunity for presenters to answer questions.
Thank you very much.
Okay, first, want to comment?
Yes. Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. That was my thought. I said I just want to bridge different stream of literature. I mean, I don't want to build anything new. So for me, it will be very useful if you consider in your generalized process also the role of knowledge. This is crucial. Let me just conclude one of the example when I was speaking about the old lady in the foreign trade statistics. You know, 3 months before she retired, I spoke with the manager of Italian foreign trade statistics for Interview. Said, what are we going to do with this lady? And she said, let's organize a retirement refreshment, okay? And I said, but what about the knowledge that she has in her brain? We don't know. So that woman was responsible of the textile product. She left my institute. 3 months later, I got a call from the Textile Industrial Association in Italy, and they told me, I don't believe you in the data you are producing anymore. We have lost the knowledge. This is crucial. We have to think that our value added is the knowledge, is not anymore processing. Thank you.
I totally subscribe to what my colleague just said. To answer your question, I have no answer. I joined this community a few years ago, and yes, for me it was surprising to see that we had still issue opening and being transparent. We are afraid of, I think we are an administration, we are afraid of mistakes. We are afraid that someone may scrutinize what we are actually doing, so we don't open. I think that's a cultural issue. There is a need for a cultural shift in that aspect, meaning that's also the idea of opening the code. If I open the code from the beginning, and again, I'm not being original. As you say, 15 years ago, I mean, the open source community, everybody knows about that. Everybody knows about the best practice. By opening the code, actually, somehow I am totally and truly sharing my computation of indicator, and if there is a genuine mistake about it, I can also prevent myself. It's also a way for user to clearly identify, spot it, and report it. And in that case, I will not be afraid because I open my code. I'm not afraid of mistake. It's because those are genuine mistake. From the moment I'm transparent about it, I can accept any kind of feedback. So I think there is a need for a cultural shift under that aspect. I would like to add also that sharing the code, opening the code, it's really a true incentive for meritocratic, for meritocracy actually, because it's a way to promote the best of us. I think it's a way to reach a community outside who wants to contribute, truly contribute, sincerely contribute, and who is skilled, who has the skill to do it. People that otherwise we would not be able to benefit from. And I think opening and sharing and putting these things publicly is really a way to, it provides incentive for this kind of improvement in our production system.
Thank you. Jolanta Szutkowska, Statistics Poland. I have general questions to our speakers. Could you share with us your opinion? How will look new pattern of leadership in statistics for the future, in the statistics of new era? When we have data revolution, access to big data, to alternative data, development of machine learning, development of artificial intelligence. What characteristics should possess leaders in those times? And another aspect, how we as statisticians are able to prepare and support users for statistics of new era? Thank you.
Okay, so who is going to start to answer?
Okay, thank you. I think that the management of the new data sources has to be done considering many aspects all together, so integrating many quality aspects. So on the one side, quality management, and so the commitment of the leadership. On the other side, process approach, so the capacity to properly treat the new sources and to ensure the quality of the production. And finally, also in the dissemination phase, we have to ensure transparency. So the idea of the code goes in this direction. Transparency towards the users on what we do. And also, because this is my, you know, my passion now, model assumptions. So while producing, we made a lot of assumptions. And sometimes we hide these assumptions, we are not clear enough, so the expert users do not know what is behind our data. However, I also have to say that we, in the past, organized consultations with the users, so they are not all the same. So there is a variety of users, and not you can profile them, and they the needs are different, so are very heterogeneous. So you should, in theory, be able to provide documentation that it's suitable for the different levels of knowledge and statistical culture and needs that the different users have.
Yes, anybody would like to ask? To add something to this? That was very, you know, your question was very general and, you know, very future-looking. Definitely. I agree with this. A very good question, which means that for such a question, there's no easy answer, but maybe somebody...
What I could add to what Giovanna, I think, said? Yeah? Is that on the other side, apart from these parts on how to disseminate, I would also put some emphasis on preparation of staff within the national statistical offices, maybe working more towards the right skills. I think now that staff working in statistical offices need to have a wide range of skills that maybe, let's say, 20 years ago was not the case. You don't need only to be a technician or a statistician. You need to be able to communicate what you do in a transparent way, as my fellow speaker said. But also, you know, I think the only way to achieve such a complete capability is to share, to organize, for example, within teams. It's the only way to have something that is so complete, because one person would probably not be able to reach this wide range that it's necessary. And so I think we should also be thinking, looking at the future on how we can prepare ourselves for this for this encompassing profile for the statisticians.
Thank you. Well, just a few remarks. Well, essentially, we have to evolve from a close... I'm going back to the discussion about knowledge. Okay, if we speak about the data, I don't think that we have too many opportunity because, you know, the private data provider, they have a lot of data, and we are not in the monopolistic position anymore. But if we think about the knowledge, that change. Because, I mean, we need knowledge from outside to produce our data, and also we need to share the knowledge with outside. You know, in the example I made about large case unit, we are at the moment, every country is, you know, designing this new organization, and we don't want statistician to stay in this unit. We want expert of accounting, we want fiscal experts, so we are sourcing knowledge from outside, and also we are sharing the knowledge with outside. The thing is, one of the crucial issues is that how knowledge will enter in our process. This means that we do interact with data user, we do interact with responder, we interact with so many people, and sometimes it's just a blah, blah, blah. So the thing is that we have to design a system where the knowledge is not only source, share, but is included in the process. So, it's a sort of ecological approach. It's like we speak too much, but we don't bring the knowledge in a systematic way into the data. And this is the challenge. Thank you.
You want to add some?
More keywords. I believe, I have no clue how a manager, our manager, the vision of our management, I have no idea. I believe, I wish our institution were more, I would say, data-centric, user-driven, and agile. That's what I wish. Agile meaning able to adapt and to answer continuously and timely to requests coming from the users.
We are slowly moving to the end. If I can add maybe one sentence to this, especially regarding your question, I think three things maybe. One of them was mentioned probably, but first one that the future is, of course, uncertain, but for sure, first of all, we will be technology-driven, right? Which is obvious, nothing special in the statement. And we don't really know how this delivery of data will be in the future. What would be the channel? We can think of something that is like some kind of chip being smartphone in the body, so we have to think about this. Second, that this is what you just said, user-driven. I think there will be more and more products in terms of information products, data products, that will be tailored to the needs of the end users. They will require this. So I think that somehow it should be taken into account. And finally, the third one, which you mentioned a little bit in your presentation, of course, we have all these owners, somehow big data, which is GAFA, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, plus Alibaba, plus maybe somebody else. And this is growing until, as you know, until 2003, mankind produced amount of data that is now being produced in less than 2 days. So it's growing and growing. The question is, how do we cope with this? And maybe we need global solutions for this. And you mentioned the World Stat and something like this, which is kind of project. I think without such kind of project, we are not going to solve this problem. The problem is also that maybe the interest of different countries is different, right, in this area. So there's no agreement in this sense. I think we came to the end. I would like to thanks a lot to our presenters who gave excellent speeches. also inspiring discussion, all discussion that gives inspiring thoughts, etc. So again, thank you very much. And I understand that we are now in the lunchtime. However, in 15 minutes in this room, I'm going to share speed talk session. So whoever would like to stay, thank you very much again.